while your lips are close to mine to last forever. Forever till the end of time.
All right, even our engineer Andrew Melton wants to dance to that song. I know that's true. So, so on this day in history, of course, that we remember his birthday today from the Drifters, because he was born on this day, Doc Green. So we are now, though, even though they don't have a birthday, we're here with our two folks from the City Paper. This is our Wednesday look at the City Paper. Baynard Woods, who is the senior editor of the City Paper, Baltimore City Paper, along with him, Anna Walsh, associate editor of the City Paper. Anna and Baynard, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
And so what are you all doing on the cover?
Well, we're doing some
Why
science.
Why are you on that cover together? What's going on here?
We're doing science. Uh-huh. We had to do an existential investigation into what is a pint.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so basically we assigned everybody on our staff a couple of bars, and everybody went around with these very official-looking beakers and ordered a pint from unsuspecting bartenders, and then measured the results right there at the bar to see whether or not a pint was actually a pint, or if it was 12 ounces, 13 ounces, 14 ounces, because we at the City Paper care a lot about beer and making sure we're getting enough beer, and we figured it was a good service to our readers.
So I mean, are most places cheating us on the pint?
Well, what we found is that sometimes a pint just can't be a pint due to the physics of pouring, that there's air that pushes the beer out of the keg into the glass, and it makes a head. And so, but there are places such as Brewer's Art that will use, when they use an actual pint glass instead of the fancy little glasses for other kinds of stuff, that will use a 20 ounce glass to get a pint, so you can get a real pint. Bertha's also does that, Bernard over at Bertha's. So some places will give you, you'll get a 17 ounce pint, so even more. Other places you end up more on average about 15, just because of the pour. But we found some as 12 ounce pints, and that there actually are glasses that are supposed to look like a pint that aren't really quite a pint. So this is an all for Baltimore Beer Week, which is beginning now. We also have the Baltimore Beer Baron, former Liquor Board member Steve Fogelman, who writes the Beer Baron column for us, does some highlights of Baltimore Beer Week. And we have a spectacular introduction about the existential quandaries of pintdom or pintness by Joe McLeod, our Mr. Wrong columnist.
So Joe is back.
He's been here all along as a writer, and he's continued to do Mr. Wrong all along. What he hasn't been doing is the art direction of the paper, which he had done for many, many years.
So Annie Walsh, any more thoughts on this beer, on what you discovered before we move on?
Well, it was actually interesting to talk to all the different bartenders and see what they had to say about it. Some bartenders that we spoke to were very explicit in calling out other bars on shortchanging their patrons. And if you, especially if you read Joe McLeod's introduction, it's all about the problems of trying to really measure this, as Boehner touched upon. And of course, if you're going to five bars in one evening, the quality of your science is going to deteriorate as you're conducting your experiments. So it's a fun read. It's mostly scientific, a little pseudoscientific, but we still think it'll be something enjoyable. And it's a good introduction to Baltimore Beer Week, as Baynard mentioned.
So and Anna herself discovered trickle-down beeronomics at the Ropewalk Tavern. So it seems to work a little bit better than trickle-down economics, I think.
So you had some also, beyond Beer Week, you had some interesting stuff in the arts, also had some interesting news coming up. You have the Holden Warren's piece on the Liberia Ebola essay, which is a really interesting essay, and Ed's piece on Section 8.
So M. Holden Warren has been in Liberia for the past several weeks, and so I'd been following his Facebook posts, and we asked him to write something about what it's actually like to be there. And so we hope this is the first of several pieces that are going to report. This sort of reports a little bit on how he ended up there, but we're hoping to get some more coverage from what's going on there on the ground. And yeah, Ed, there's this amazing lottery, you know, a lottery for people to get Section 8 housing. And there's a lot of confusion around it. So Ed tried to clear that up, because especially for people who don't have homes, this is the most important thing coming up this year. And you know, they're starting the lottery over. And so it's really a big deal that no one has really covered. So you know, as Ed does best, pulling up a thing that, that isn't on the sort of menu of other media outlets and putting it up there.
No, I thought that was, they were both good, really good articles. I was looking at them before we went on the air on your website. So I always, that's part of the stuff I also love about the city paper, besides the beer and what's happening in town, is you go under things the way other people have not gone under them, which I think is important to do. So what about on the art scene?
Yeah, so there's an amazing, Robert Marbury has a book that he's going to be talking about tomorrow night at Atomic Books, about rogue taxidermists. People are using taxidermy to make surrealist-inspired art all around the world. And so he's a Baltimore guy, but he traveled to Australia, to the Netherlands, and profiled his fellow workers in this. He does what he called vegan taxidermy, using stuffed animals of the plush variety to make these tableaus of really intricate and beautiful tableaus. But some of the people, like Kate Clark, we have the picture of, uses human faces with these monkey bodies in a way that really plumbs what the robotics people call the uncanny valley. It gets so close to being human-looking that it's disturbing because of the ways that it's not. And it really is an amazing book. And so and he talks about it really well. He's quite a talker. So to hear him talk about that tomorrow night at Atomic will be great. And there's a really excellent band, Boy Spit. They're going to be playing at the Windup Space on Friday. And we have a nice profile of them and their love of milkshakes this week. And in the food section, we have Mary Zajac back. And I think Anna has some nice stuff to say about her review of Pen and Quill. It's always great to have her writing for us.
Sure. Mary is a lovely writer, and she talks about the various influences that Pen and Quill encapsulates. They have a lot of global influences in their food, but also a lot of their dishes are harking back to old school Maryland traditions that aren't your usual crab cakes necessarily, but things that have been staples on old Baltimore restaurants for a while. And of course, Mary is a great writer, so all of the food sounds delicious, and I immediately wanted to go to Pen and Quill and try all of these dishes that she had. So it's definitely worth a read, I would say.
Maybe it's time for try two for me then on Pen and Quill this
evening.
So Anna Walsh is associate editor of the Baltimore City Paper, along with Maynard Woods, who is senior editor of the Baltimore City Paper, joining us here to look at this week's issue. Just run around town and just get them from your local convenience store, pop that little thing on the corner and take it out and walk away and read it. It's always chock full of what's happening around our town, and also some really, really serious and good reporting along with all the rest. Maynard and Anna, thank you so much.
And I think some of these bards need a second round of pint testing, Mark, so we'll have to go out and, well, and try it out.
Give me a holler.
All right, we'll do.
Thank
all right.
you.
See y'all. So that's it for the Mark Steiner Show today. I want to thank you all for being part of the program today here on the Mark Steiner Show. As always, it's great to have you all along here with us for the ride. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our intern is Sienna Greaves. You can hear the show again, podcast our past shows, by visiting us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And we are going out with Never Can Tell by Chuck Berry, who received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on this day in 1977. And for Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, let me say first, farewell, John Tugler. We really enjoyed you being part of us. We love you. And fly well, Brother John. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.